This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. There's more at allbook-books.com. Actually, I spent the other day on the phone. I was getting off a mailing list for the Aspen Institute Literary, whatever they do, but seemed like a cool place. But then I learned about their sort of political bents. I don't remember the details in their political bent, but the point is, there's something about the name of All Book Books that when I say it over the phone to people, this took several minutes for her to get the spelling correctly. Something about the repeated word, I think, that trips the mind in a kind of, segueing into the topic of poetry. But I will say All Book Books, and I'll spell it out, and people will say, "So it's All Books?" And I'm like, "No, All Book Books." So anyway, that's my promo. Anyway, that's my little spiel as segueing into the topic of poetry, because it is National Poetry Month. But for many, many years, I've had an aversion to the word national tacked on to that label. On the positive side, the Kalevala, which is the Finnish national epic poem, is some beautiful poetry. Actually, the rhythm is quite unique. It was borrowed by an American poet. I forget which one. I'd have to look it up. But anyway, I started thinking about nation and poetry, and that got me into the selections that I'm going to read. First of all, the word nation, the root, the Indo-European root, is Gnasci, G-N-A-S-C-I, from G-E-N-E, be born, give birth, as in generations, but also in the context of why I don't like National Poetry Month, is because of the genocide. There it is in the word, attempt to kill a nation, to kill the birth and the birthing. And that is the history of some of the history of the U.S. nation. Sterilizations of native people, boarding schools, getting them to lose their language. These are all the things that are part of a nation and their birthing. Their gene genius. So that's some of what I think that highlighting, in this case, national, would tend to overlook that. So I'm going to look that. Now, one of my theories is that I think English, American people, English people, I think, this is after years of poetry and some comparison, I think that American English language, whatever you want to call it, poets are actually searching or striving for or grasping for a taste of native or indigenous language. Because, okay, here's an example. I saw a Mohawk chief, Tom Porter, give a talk a couple times on Long Island, and one of the things that stood out to me that he said was that the Mohawk language, they don't have a word for the color green. So if you saw a woman with a green dress on, how would you describe it? And he said something like, the dress is the color of the grass in springtime, which would be a lighter green because it's spring and the grass is just starting to go. So it's a lighter green. So along with just the beauty of that description, the specificity of that description, my poetic ear hears that the woman's dress is the color of the grass in springtime. Da 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 da. So that's kind of where the music, and you can study all the iambics and spondees and all that to get the technical phrases. But that's, to me, where poetry and music combine. It's hard for me to like poetry if there isn't some music in it. Or rather, I could say I like poetry more when there's some music in it. So I want to start off with a little book. It's called Native American Songs and Poems, an anthology edited by Brian Swan. It's from Dover. I don't know if they're still publishing on Long Island, but anyway, these books are like, I don't know if they still are, but incredibly inexpensive at the time. This was $1.50, published in 1996. Anyway, the simplicity, we're going to read one or two here. And again, these are songs, but I don't know how much they are technically poems or songs in the sense of an art performance, because I know that Native people have songs that they sing to the water, they sing to the plants, they're planting, and so that these songs are like, they're like a form of energy and consciousness and affirmation and whatever, that's part of the light living energy process. So it's not just an artistic thing, but anyway, I'm going to read this, and this is an Inuit song. I won't even try to pronounce it. Says something about adrift on the ice while sealing and only reach shore after a week of hardship. I guess sealing would be hunting seal, maybe. But anyway, it's very simple, and that's why I like it. And it also has a message. I am happy. This is good. There is nothing but ice all around. That is good. I am happy. This is good. For land, we have slush. That is good. I am happy. This is good. When I do not know enough, it is good. When I tire of being awake, I begin to wake. It gives me joy. So my favorite line is, when I do not know enough, it is good. That's just accepting the grand scape of the universe and everything, that there's no way you're gonna know enough, but that's okay. And then just a little bit of this called Song of the Earth, the Navajo, or as they call themselves, the Diné. They have beautiful, sort of part of their spirituality is the blessing way. And I don't know if this is part of it, but just at the beginning of the poem, it begins, the earth is beautiful. The earth is beautiful. The earth is beautiful. Below the east, the earth, its face towards the east. The top of its head is beautiful. The soles of its feet are beautiful. Its feet, they are beautiful. Its legs, they are beautiful. Its body, it is beautiful. Its chest, its breast, its head feather, they are beautiful. Below the west, the sky, it is beautiful. Its face toward the west. The top of its head is beautiful. The soles of its feet are beautiful. Its feet, they are beautiful. Its legs, they are beautiful. Its body, it is beautiful. Its chest, its breast, its head feather, they are beautiful. Below the east, the dawn, its face toward the east. The top of its head is beautiful. The soles of its feet are beautiful. Its feet, they are beautiful. Its legs, they are beautiful. Its body, it is beautiful. Its chest, its breast, its head feather, they are beautiful. Below the west, the afterglow of sundown, its face toward the west is beautiful. Below the east, white corn, its face toward the east is beautiful. Below the south, blue corn, its face toward the south is beautiful. Below the west, yellow corn, its face toward the west is beautiful. Below the north, vari-colored corn, its face toward the north is beautiful. It goes on, but I don't want to mispronounce stuff. And they talk about the corn pollen. So again, it's very simple, and it's has an affirmation quality to it. And this one is by Joy Harjo. She was the U.S. Poet Laureate. So now we're merging the streams here. A Native woman as the U.S. Poet Laureate. I haven't studied how that all worked out, but she's a member of the Muskoki Creek Nation. This is a poem called Remember. Remember the sky that you were born under. Know each of the stars' stories. Remember the moon. Know who she is. Remember the sun's birth at dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and the giving away to night. Remember your birth, how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father. He is your life also. Remember the earth whose skin you are. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth, we are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who all have their tribes, their families, their histories too. Talk to them, listen to them. They are alive poems. Remember the wind, remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember, you are all people, and all people are you. Remember, you are this universe, and this universe is you. Remember, all is in motion, is growing, is you. Remember, language comes from this. Remember, the dance language is, that life is. Remember. And jump in, this is not going to be a poem, but it's poetic. It's from an anthology, Soul Companions, Conversations with Contemporary Wisdom Keepers, a collection of encounters with spirit. And this is by a Lakota friend who I have interviewed not too long ago about his book, Children of the Sun, which all books published, his book of prosatry. His name is Teocasin Ghost Horse. And this, when Joy Harjo spoke about the language, remember, language comes from this. Remember, the dance language is. Now, in this this prose, he gives some essence of the Lakota language, and it's quite fascinating. Lakota is both an earth language and a star language. The Lakota elders who have been in spiritual ceremony with what they call the Illuminated Ones speak the old Lakota language of the stars. It's almost like when people speak in tongues, but it's not that. It's a language of energy. I can't understand the old language that the elders understand. We sing the songs that will invoke the attention of a particular dimension of spirit and spirit guides that Wakan Tanka understands. It's like a key opening up a dimension, so when we're conducting our ceremonies, certain songs invoke certain energies. Energy is sound. Earth is singing a song to you of the star knowledge. Many native people get their songs from watching the aurora borealis or northern lights. Likewise, when we hear a bird or an animal speak, we try to mimic them because they're speaking the language of the stars. So the energy, that's part of, to me, also what the music, to me it's the music, but it's a poetry that I love probably the most, but it's also the energy of it. A lot of, as Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who I'm also going to read from, he said a lot of modern poetry is just chopped up prose. So the energy and the sound and all that and the rhythm is all part of the essence of poetry. And also how wonderful to think of, when you hear a bird song, to think of that's the language of the stars. I mean, that, again, see, this is what I'm talking about when I said that poetry, Western English poetry is striving for indigenous consciousness, because that consciousness is in their old ancient language, that the birds are singing the language of the stars. Now, if I had thought of that line, I'd think, well, that's a great poem. That's a great line, but that's part of the native understanding and culture. And as to the word nation, another take on nation, because we tend to think, Western Americans tend to think of nation as the land and this country and this America, and we put this label on it, but not so for the native people. And again, these are what I'm reading is not the original language. That's the translation into English. So I'm guessing it's even umpteen times more powerful and beautiful in the native languages. But here's another piece in Teocasin's essay. In Lakota, we don't have a word for animal. In Latin, ani means soul and mal means bad. So we can't call these creatures that we consider to be our brothers and sisters bad souls. Each life form that we can name, we call a nation. There's the ant nation, the tree nation, air nation, the water nation. So when we look at those things in relationship, we know that one time the water will be a spirit guide. One time a tree will be a spirit guide. Or maybe just a bird call will be a spirit guide, because they lead us into different dimensions all the time. The damage that we have done as human beings to the earth is because we have forgotten the many nations of life that have given to us. I'm going to read that line again. That's potent. The damage that we have done as human beings to the earth is because we have forgotten the many nations of life that have given to us. Now, people have umpteen reasons about climate change and this and that, global warming, climate chaos, on and on and on, and the CO2 and then this and then that. But this ties into what was talked about when I reviewed the cobalt red. Because the mineral, the cobalt is a nation. It is a being. It is a living being. But if we don't treat it as a living being, then we, in effect, commit genocide. Because as that book said, there won't be any cobalt left in so many years. And that's a genocide of the cobalt. But we don't think of it like that if we're thinking, oh, I need a new battery. The battery to run this smartphone or whatever is so thank you for the cobalt. So I'll read that yet again. The damage we have done as human beings to the earth is because we have forgotten that the many nations of life that have given to us our medicine, our way to live amongst other life on earth was gifted to us by these nations. So the energies that help us are given to us by these other nations. So if that's national poetry month, then I'm all for it. Now I'll shift it a little bit, the gear to now I'm not going to do this justice because this is a wonderful book. I don't know that they're poems. They read like poems, but they are spoken word. Many of them were done as spoken word with a band playing music. This is Lines from a Mind by John Trudell. And I encourage you to look up some of his spoken word online because it's powerful. Lines from a Mind, MINEDMIND. So again, segueing from that, but this is more intense and this is more sort of in your face, but it's from the native perspective of what has happened to this nation, in quotes. And this is called To God. We hope you don't mind. Now you got to remember too that this is the native peoples before the settlers, before Columbus. There wasn't a word God. The word God was not here. That was brought over in the Christianity. That was brought over here. That's foreign. To God, we hope you don't mind, but we would like to talk to you. There are some things we need to straighten out. It's about these Christians. They claim to be from your nation, but man, you should see the things they do. All the time blaming it on you. Manifest destiny, genocide, maximize profit, sterilization, raping the earth, lying, taking more than they need in all the forms of the greed. We ask them why. They say it's God's will. Damn, God, they make it sound so hard. Remember Jesus? Would you send him back to them? Tell them not to kill him. Rather, they should listen. Stop abusing his name and yours. We do not mean to be disrespectful, but you know how it is. Our people have their own ways. We never even heard of you until not long ago. Your representatives spoke magnificent things of which we were willing to believe, but from the way they acted, we know you and we were being deceived. We do not mean you or your Christian children any bad, but you all came to take all we had. We have not seen you, but we have heard so much. It is time for you to decide what life is worth. We already remember, but maybe you forgot. And there's a powerful line. Tell them not to kill him, rather they should listen. So that again is another message of listening to the earth, listening to the stars, listening to the birds. Listen, listen, listen. That would probably be number one advice if anybody wants to start writing poetry or anybody who's stuck or wants to improve their poetry is... The logical thing would be start writing, but the other thing, this number one, would be start listening and then write. Listen first. And just to be, as Fox News likes to say, fair and balanced, I'm going to read one of my favorite American poets, passed away not long ago at the age of 100, 101. It was Lawrence Ferlinghetti. And it's a wonderful little book, Poetry as Insurgent Art. It's not so much poems, but it's poetic arousing of what poetry can do and what poetry is. And he's got a quote I like a lot. I think I used it once. Just strive to change the world so that there is no need for insurgent poetry or something like that. And he starts off, I am signaling you through the flames. The North Pole is not where it used to be. Manifest destiny is no longer manifest. Civilization self-destructs. Nemesis is knocking at the door. What are poets for in such an age? What is the use of poetry? So this is, you know, he's tapping into the urgency of the times. Climate change, climate chaos, and he's calling on, you know, poets to speak up and use their voices. Read between the lines of human discourse. Make your mind learned its way around the heart. Your life is your poetry. If you have no heart, you'll write heartless poetry. Write short poems in the voice of birds. Birdsong is not made by machines. Give your poem wings to fly to the treetops. Don't pander, especially not to audiences, readers, editors, and publishers. Don't cater to the middle mind of America nor to consumer society. Be a poet, not a huckster. Don't put down the scholastics who say a poem should have wholeness, harmony, radiance, truth, beauty, goodness. Go to sea in ships or work near water and paddle your own boat. Why listen to critics who have not yet themselves written great masterpieces? Be a wolf in the sheepfold of silence. Don't slip on the banana peel of nihilism, even while listening to the roar of nothingness. Make a new poem out of every experience and overcome the myopia of the present moment. So there's a little sampling for Poetry Month, or perhaps now you will consider maybe it could be called Nation's Poetry Month. But then again, that's all year. At least instead of National Poetry Month, restricting it to the sort of more subtly patriotic that's encouraging, I would recommend Nation's Poetry Month. So Nation's Poetry Month is also, as a poem, is a creation in the moment. The poem itself is a birth, or you're like being your own mother to your own child. If you write a poem, you're giving birth to something. So even in the word poetry, I think the root has to do with creation and a making, in a way emulating the creator. So that'll do it for this little exploration of national, nations, languages, English, native, and such like. Thanks for listening, and be well.